Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2018, Episode 9. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice. You know, let's not waste any time and, you know, play the music as long as we possibly can. Let's bring in the one, the only guy we're looking answers for from. That would be Dr. Rob Zadiska. A lot of people wanting answers, Doc. Lots and lots of people wanting answers.
Beer,
that's the answer?
That's the answer.
Well, I can tell you that tonight's beer is a vanilla bean pumpkin. It's the seasonal from Infusion Brewing Company. They just tapped this the other day. I was up at the Benson location, and they just poured the growler full. So, and full disclosure, you know, we love Infusion Brewing Company, but we're also honest when it comes to the beer. You are not a huge pumpkin beer guy, right?
I'm one of those guys that you see the memes floating around the internet where it's like, how to drink a pumpkin beer? Step one, place in trash can. That's my usual opinion of a pumpkin
now,
beer.
Now, the vanilla bean is their staple. That's what they've made their name off of. Now, they've added the pumpkin to it. And I talked to the bartender, and they said they really laid back on the pumpkin this year. It's not as pumpkin-y, as we should say.
I can't taste it.
Well, that's good for you, right?
Yeah, I like this because it's they got their vanilla bean blonde, which is that's like their flagship.
Yeah, that is the flagship.
You would be correct. You can go to most of the Hy-Vees. You can go to a lot of. I mean, there's a lot of restaurants, a lot of bars carry that one. That's an infusion staple, and it's an excellent beer. I mean, for a beer that has that vanilla infusion.
Oh, hey, funny how that works out, isn't it?
There we go. That worked. It's not too sweet. It's not overpowering. And so that's why I like it. I got to be honest. I can't taste the pumpkin.
Well, and that's your palate.
I feel like I'm drinking the vanilla bean blonde is what I feel like I'm drinking.
Now, I know my wife and my daughter also tried it. I think they were able to taste the pumpkin. They really liked it. So
and maybe there's a hint of it there. It's not much, though.
But shouldn't that be what it is, though? It shouldn't be. I don't want to drink something that's so overpowering. You just want it either on the front end or the back end, and then you just want beer going down, right?
And that's why I think a lot of people don't like. I mean, some people kind of dig the pumpkin beer, but I think most people don't, and I'm not sure why. Commercially, you see a lot of breweries putting out like a really heavy pumpkin beer. I just can't do it. It's not my thing. I like this. But I think a lot of the reason I like it is that I'm really having trouble picking up any pumpkin at all. It's a great beer.
So there you go. Dr. Rob says, for the Huskers starting 0-2 for the first time since probably most anybody that's listening to this podcast was born, the answer to all problems is
beer.
Beer. There you go.
Drown your sorrows.
That's why we have beer on this podcast each and every week. Of course, this podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy. Dave Remington, a great friend of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. In fact, this podcast was kind of his brainchild. He was into podcasting before most people were into podcasting. And the Remington Trophy presentation is coming up January 12th, 2019 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. 6:30 p.m. for the cocktail hour, 7:30 for the program and dinner. You will not be disappointed in anything. You will love the venue. You will love the guest speakers. You will love the decorations. You will love all the former Huskers you see. You will love the night because it's really, and it's not really a Husker event. I need to state that because I think a lot of people go to these things.
It's a college football event.
It's a college football event, and the fact that Dave can pull that off in Lincoln is amazing. He does not need Huskers to be there all the time. They are, but it really is a celebration of college football and the winner of the Remington Trophy. So for more information, go to remingtontrophy.com. You can also purchase your tables or tickets right there online at remingtontrophy.com. Time now, before we dive into the Huskers' loss to Troy, as you can see, we're trying to put it off as long as possible because I think that's what most people want to do. They just want to forget that Nebraska lost at home to Troy. We have not forgotten, and I'm actually going to switch up the podcast. We don't really have a script to this podcast. Sure, we talk about the Remington Trophy. Sure, we talk about Infusion Brewing. Sure, we talk about Ticket Express and Husker Hounds. But Rob and I basically each and every week, and you'll attest to this, Rob, we just basically turn on the mics and start talking. I mean, we don't really go in with an agenda, and we end up talking for usually about an hour. We could probably go more most of the time, but it is Monday night at 9 p.m. Yeah, we're not bad at this, but it is Monday night at 9 p.m., and our wives might be upset if we're talking way too late.
I don't think they care.
Well, maybe not. You're right. Because the sooner I get done, the faster I have to go. You know, I'm in bed with my wife, and she just gets as far away from me as possible. So time now for our Remington Trophy watch list spotlight. This week, we're going to the Big 12 Conference, and the old rival of the Nebraska Cornhuskers, the Oklahoma Sooners, Jonathan Alvarez. He's a redshirt senior. Now, when you think redshirt, you go, oh, he redshirted back in his freshman years. Rob's going to fill us in. He's an interesting cat.
He is. It's just, this is kind of an interesting story. This is a guy came out of high school, center and guard, coming out of high school. It kind of depends on which recruiting service you followed. About one third of them had him rated as a three-star center. About two thirds of the rating services had him rated as a 2 to 3-star guard. So a lot of people kind of project him as a guard in college. Freshman year, actually, I think he played in one game. I think it was like Louisiana Monroe, one of those. Sophomore year, started the majority of the season at guard. I think he had 3 starts at center. 2016, same thing, began the season starting as the center. He was actually, as a junior in 2016, now he's a true junior that year, was actually on the Remington watch list then. And so the guy had enough productivity. Now, it doesn't hurt if you're in a Bob Stoops, Lincoln Riley offense. But he was on the watch list then at that time. So that was 2 years ago. Had an injury, came back and played after that injury, but it still kind of lingered a little bit. So he went into 2017 and actually redshirted in 2017. So he redshirted his 4th year in school. Kind of a rarity, unless you get a situation like he was in where you've got an injury involved, and that's one of the few times that you'll see guys do that, where you have kind of that late redshirt. But redshirted 2017, and now he's back playing 2018.
That's crazy. And if you watch Oklahoma over the weekend, they beat Iowa State. A closer game than Oklahoma's had in its first two. But nonetheless, Lincoln Riley has that team going. That offense is pretty darn solid, man.
It is clicking right now. I still worry about Mike Stoops as a D coordinator, though.
Here's what I worry about Lincoln Riley. That he falls into the same thing that Frank Solich fell into. And that
He kept the other guy.
Yes. And it's hard to fire Mike Stoops when Bob Stoops is the guy that handpicked you for the job.
It is, but God, I don't even think Bob Stoops had that much faith in Mike as a defensive coordinator. He only kept him around because it was his brother.
Yeah,
he's going to be Lincoln Riley's Tim Beck. He's going to be that guy that you kind of feel like you got to keep around, but he's going to bring your program down at some point or another.
Hey, don't forget, if you're looking for Husker tickets, and I know even to away games, I was talking to Chad and Jessica over to TicketExpress.com and Ticket Express. I can tell you right now, there's a lot of Husker fans traveling to Ann Arbor, Michigan this weekend to go to the Big House. I know tickets were in such high demand. I have several people at my place of employment that have been looking for tickets and actually went to Ticket Express to purchase those tickets, and they're going to Ann Arbor this weekend thanks to Ticket Express. When you need tickets home or away, football, volleyball, basketball, concerts, Orpheum Theater. Rob, I know you go to the Orpheum quite a bit with your wife. Those shows are sold out. They're not for Chad. He has a way of finding those tickets. That's why Ticket Express is your source, your authority when it comes to getting the tickets to the events that you want to go to. Go to TicketExpress.com. That's TicketExpress.com for any event where no event is ever sold out with Ticket Express. And if you're going to the Michigan game, you want to represent. If you're going to a home game, you want to represent. That's why you go see Scotty at Husker Hounds. Husker Hounds, 3 locations in the Omaha area. And I'm telling you right now, you could go into any one of their 3 locations and know that they have more Husker gear than anybody else I've ever seen. In fact, he has rarity stuff. I took Scott to an auction, or invited him to come to an auction that I was emceeing. I don't know if you went to that one at Anthony's last year.
I
mean, he was buying stuff left and right. I mean, so he has new stuff. He has collectible stuff. You name it, Scott.
A lot of collectibles.
Yeah.
Great sizes. He can fit me. That's not easy to do.
Scotty at Husker Hounds, huskerhounds.com, or one of the 3 locations in the Omaha area. Okay, so Nebraska lost to Troy. And I'm gonna do something different, Rob. I'm gonna let the listeners be heard first. Last night on Twitter, which you can follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, @DocTalkSports, I may occasionally tweet tweet from there just to promote the podcast or say, hey, we're recording, send in your questions. We got a record number of questions. I mean, lists and lists of questions.
We got a lot of questions.
So what I'm going to do now is, instead of you and I just bantering about Michigan and bantering about Troy, I think the listeners have done a really good job of asking questions about the game that I think people, you know, they want to know the answer to.
Well, let's start at the top.
So we're going to start with Elizabeth. How about that? You know, women listen to the podcast, too. This is just not a male-dominated podcast. Women listen to this podcast. And Elizabeth has this to say. Hey, Dr. Rob, the loss against Troy was, of course, quite painful, but many fans seem to be putting the blame squarely on Bunch. I didn't think he played that poorly, but I could only listen to the game. Was he really that bad? Appreciate your insight. Keep the faith and go Big Red.
No, I didn't think he was that bad. I think he has – I hate phrasing it this way – compared to a guy like Martinez, he has a little bit of a more limited skill set. He's not a horrible passer by any means. That last interception, which was late fourth quarter, you know, it was maybe thrown a little high and a little behind the wide receiver, but at the same time, it essentially went through the receiver's hands, and the defender turned around, ball was right there, guy made a great play. So that's... I'm not sure I'd put something like that squarely on Bunch. I think he's hurt a little bit by the fact that he's not as good a passer as Martinez is. And Martinez came in with a kid who was kind of touted for his running ability. And everybody said, hey, if he beats out Jebby, it's going to be because he can run better. One, he can, and that adds an incredible additional dimension to his game as a quarterback. Fact of the matter is he is probably a much better passer and has a stronger arm and is a more accurate passer than Bunch is. And so he's a better passer. He's a far, far better runner. It's not that Bunch is bad. It's just he doesn't have all the tools in the toolbox. I don't think you can blame Bunch and say Bunch played badly. Bunch played within his skill set.
I mean,
I thought he did a pretty good job of it.
Let's keep in mind, Bunch is not the second-team quarterback. He's the third-team quarterback.
He is.
And that's, I mean, I know he's second-team now, but essentially, he's the third-team quarterback. And can you imagine that? I mean, you're a walk-on, and I know he's better. I mean,
yes, Matt Turman.
Yeah, well, but just walking into Memorial Stadium and making your first start and that kind of and then the pressure of when you fall behind, I mean, it just creates a whole bunch of different
scenarios. Well, and I think that
scenarios.
Also kind of, you know, Frost made the point that kind of you spot them a couple of scores off turnovers and all of a sudden, and I guess I'm kind of counting that punt return for a touchdown in sort of that same category. Special team scores are – in terms of impact, they're very similar to scores off of turnovers. They're huge game changers because it's scores that you don't account for, that you can't plan for. They just happen, and when they do, it's awesome if you're the one getting them. But you have Nebraska already down by a couple of scores, and now you're even playing more so out of the rhythm, out of the game plan of what you want to do. Nebraska wants to run the ball. Frost wants to run the ball. And when you're down by two scores, you kind of got to open things up. You got to play a little bit of catch up. And the way you do that is with the passing game. And so Frost himself admitted they had to pass more than they really wanted to in that game. And when it's not your quarterback's strong suit, that's going to hurt you.
All right.
So I, like I said, I don't blame Bunch. I thought he, within the confines of his skill set, I thought he himself did okay. It's just he doesn't have all the tools in the toolbox that a kid like Martinez has.
I'm doing this in no particular order, so there could be no rhyme or reason to the question, and it may not pertain to anything. But we just got a lot of questions, and I'm just going to go in the order they came in. Todd asks, do you think the Huskers should play the makeup game with Akron or just skip it and save us from the embarrassment? That's a frustrated fan from losing to Troy, and Akron just beat Northwestern over the weekend.
Yeah, so did Duke. I don't know if Northwestern.
I don't think Northwestern's that good.
I think they, which I can't figure it out because it's not like they had just a complete wholesale graduation losses from last year. I thought Northwestern was actually going to be a very good team this year. I don't think Akron's any better than Troy or Colorado, and so I would say by all means put them on the schedule. it's not going to hurt. You get another game under your belt. You get more experience under your belt. You know, I talked before, earlier in the year, I think right after the Akron game that didn't happen, how a lot of coaches, Osborne included, always threw around numbers that playing one 3.5-hour football game was the equivalent of 1 to 2 weeks of actual practice time. And those coaches are right. I mean, you gain so much more from an actual football game than you do from practicing. I think you play the game. It's part of the reason everybody loves bowl games so much. It's not only the practice time. It's getting players in a game situation. That's it's huge from a developmental standpoint.
Bob writes in, says, longtime listener, first-time caller. Hi, guys. Hope the beer is good. Here's my question. What the hell is happening? Why is it so hard not to fumble the ball? Is it possible to go 3 plays in a row without a boneheaded penalty? How hard is it to have all 5 guys up front block in the correct assignments? For all the talk about the offseason conditioning, we have not been stronger in the fourth quarter than other teams. I'll hang up and listen. That's what he says.
Yeah, you know, the easy answer there, yeah, it really is that hard. It truly is. Where to start here to try and explain
start this? With, is it that hard not to fumble?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you have large men hitting you at high speed. It becomes more complicated when your mind is preoccupied with other things. When you're running a certain play and you're highly experienced running that play and the guys around you are experienced running that play, you run that play without really thinking about it all that much. It's just nature and habit of having to run it so many times and having a feel for it that you're able to do it without having to think about it, which frees up your mind to think about other things like, hey, I got 2 defenders bearing down to me. Cover up the ball with both arms and lock on tight. It does. When you have all these other things you have to work on, the system that got installed last spring and then into the course of the fall, I cannot emphasize enough how difficult that is. These guys are going to be kind of figuring out and trying to sort of plod their way through learning this system as the season goes along. And everybody thinks, you know what, after game 3, you're not a rookie anymore. You know what? No, that's not true. You've got a ton of really young players. It takes time. It takes development. And when these guys are thinking about an entire system that they're still learning, it takes a while to get this down. You know, I said in some of the really early podcasts we did this year, this is going to be a multi-year process. I've told so many people I thought this season could be ugly. I thought somewhere in the 5 to 7 win range, and I thought 7 was really optimistic. I thought 5 was realistic. It is. It's that tough. Think about the great teams out there, the truly, truly outstanding football teams, and how hard it is to win and win consistently. If it wasn't that hard, everybody would be doing it. You could ask the same question of Mike Riley. Here's a coach who's been doing this for 30 years. Take Bo Pelini. You got a guy who cut his teeth in the NFL. You got Frank Solich, who sat and learned under the master for the better part of 2 decades. You got Tom Osborne, who went almost 20 years before he quote-unquote figured it out. Yeah, it really is that hard. Why is it there's so many truly great coaches right now? Let me ask you this. Give me the 5 best coaches in college football right now.
Nick Saban.
1.
Urban Meyer.
And all of the
Chris Peterson?
He's probably up there. I'd probably put maybe Gary Patterson up there in terms of the working wonders with what he's got at a small religious school that still cares about academics.
Do you put is Mike Leach one of the great ones? I think he's a great system. Is Kirk Ferentz a great
offensive
one?
Mind? I think Ferentz is a very good coach.
But to be considered great, don't you have to win championships?
Yes.
That's the point.
I think Ferentz is an excellent coach. 30 years from now, and Ferentz will probably actually be a College Football Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
30 years from now, people aren't going to look back and go, oh, yeah, Kirk Ferentz, one of the all-time greats.
That's fair. I do not dispute that at all.
Is he an outstanding coach? Yes, he is. The guy is excellent.
And the only reason I brought him up, A, because most people know that I'm an Iowa fan, but B, his longevity, right? I mean, not too many people get that kind of longevity. But
you're not going to get a lot of other guys at Iowa.
So can we say Kirby Smart's a great coach? Can we say Dabo Swinney's a great coach?
I would put Dabo in there because all of a sudden he's got that truly growing track record. I mean, he's played in three straight national title games. He's won one of them. Almost won a second.
So he's put the consistency there.
Yeah. You look at Dabo and say, okay, if we leave him alone for the next 10 years, what's he going to do? He's probably going to come pretty darn close to what he's done over the last three.
All right, Mark has a question.
But yeah, it's harder in hell. That's why Travis and I sit here and go like, oh, God, it's kind of hard to come up with.
With great coaches. We didn't say good. We didn't say excellent. We said great.
Five current coaches. Who are truly, truly all-time greats. Dabo could be one. Kirby Smart could become one. Chris Peterson could go on to become one.
I mean, Mark Richt, I can't even say that about.
No. Yeah, it's tough.
But we've put out really popular names, but none of us would go, boy, he's just one of the greatest of all time.
And do you know why?
Because they haven't won championships.
No. Why haven't they won championships?
Well, Mark Richt always in a position to, wasn't good enough.
Yeah, because being truly great at this, being good at this is really, really hard.
Mark has this question. The O-line was clearly not getting the job done last Saturday. Are they getting beat in muscle, skill, scheme, or all the above? And is there a variable fix for this season?
Because I think there's, you know, Damon Benning and I actually went back and forth a little bit on Twitter today. I mean, a good way, talking about this. And a lot of it kind of came down to what we think was just assignment breakdown. I think it was some misreads and assignment breakdowns that allowed defenders basically, they left a free defender on a handful of plays. Now, the other thing is, and I'm not sure the guys on the line had a feel that they were going to see this as much. But Troy has they've got a very aggressive defensive line that kind of, like their point is they're penetrators. They're going to get one or two guys into the backfield every single play. And they're good at that. They stunt, they move, they shoot gaps. It makes it difficult. And if you're not prepared for that, it can make it really difficult. And Frost made the point that he said he apologized to his team for not having him ready. And I think that's what he was referencing. I did see some stuff on the offensive line that bugged me a little bit. And I think better technique can fix this. But I saw both offensive tackles, so Farniok and Hymus, both showed some susceptibility to a bull rush. When the defensive ends just decided, you know what, we're not going to put a move on you, we're not going to try and go around you, we're dropping the head and shoulder and we're going to plow right through you. They got high, they stood up, and they didn't get very good arm extension. And when that happens, you get driven back and the pocket collapses. That happened consistently in bunch, consistently got flushed out of the pocket. that's something that they're going to have to shore up.
Darren kind of follows up on the offensive line. First of all, he says, thank you for making Doc Talk one of my favorite podcasts. New episodes always get pushed to the top of my queue. Well, thank you, Darren. He says, in the Colorado game, we saw the O-line pushing the Colorado D-line around for much of the game. We didn't see that at all against Troy. What are your thoughts on this and why? Also, do you think the Huskers are working with a limited playbook due to Bunch running the offense? Please say yes. And once Martinez is back, we will go undefeated the rest of the season.
I don't know about that last point, but yeah, I think the playbook was limited because of Bunch. There's some stuff he just can't do. That's just fact of the matter. I mean, there's a reason Martinez was the starter, and it's just more tools in the toolbox. He's a better passer, and he is a significantly better running quarterback. Now, in terms of the pushing guys around, the ability's there. I think these guys, you've got some guys with great size and great strength, and they've got the ability to move guys up front. I don't think Colorado ran, especially on your quote-unquote running downs, Colorado did not run as much of an attacking scheme with their front guys. The front 3 to 5 guys, Colorado just didn't bring as much heat. Troy did. Troy was shooting guys, shooting gaps, and using guys in a – they weren't reading and reacting. They were penetrating. And that's the style Troy runs, and I think that's why Frost felt he might not have done as good a job preparing these guys. But, yeah, I do think it's fixable. Now, a couple of guys have kind of referenced the off-season conditioning program. I think they did as good a job as they could have. I got to be honest. I think Zach Duvall worked miracles over this past offseason with what he did with this team. I really, truly believe that. You and I talked about last year and even earlier this year the kind of physical development that you want. Not where they're at right now, but the kind of physical development where you look at them and go, okay, this is what I wanted to see. This is where I want our team to be at. That's a couple-year process. Even with the best strength coaches, best equipment, best techniques, and a lot of buy-in from the players, that's at least a 2-year process to get to the level of physical development, physical conditioning that somebody like Frost wants for his team to be able to run the system they want to run. Now, the other thing as well, too, Frost didn't recruit any of these linemen. These were guys who were recruited to play essentially. Some were recruited by Pelini to play basically kind of a sort of a combo run-pass offense. The guys that Riley recruited were recruited to play basically sort of a classic 5-step and 7-step drop pro-style passing offense. These guys were not recruited to play in this system. Frost needs guys who can move.
But isn't talent adaptable?
Not always.
Okay,
is Tommy Frazier going to play quarterback in the NFL?
No.
He's incredibly talented. Why can't he be adaptable?
But how about for the linemen?
Can Eric Crouch play quarterback in the NFL?
No, he tried
and
did not.
He's got the Heisman Tommy should have won.
That's fair.
I'm not saying Crouch didn't deserve it.
But Tommy did. I agree.
My point is Tommy did. Tommy also deserved the Heisman. That's the point I'm trying to make.
But not for linemen. So the scheme.
Could Crouch play quarterback in the NFL?
No, he tried and did not make it.
No, he was a third down running back
and a punt returner.
Split in and kick returner. It's not always a 100% correlation. I know from talking to parents whose kids have been recruited by Frost, because there's a handful of local guys. Frost says he does not necessarily want. Now, there are some big bodies he's recruiting, but Frost does not typically want to go after the 6'5", 330-pound high school senior.
So he wouldn't have recruited you.
Well, actually, I completely fit the mold of what he's after. I was 6'5", 275 pounds as a high school senior, and I ran a 4.75 40.
No, you didn't.
Yeah,
you did not.
You can go look it up. Dude, I was running Nick Gallery numbers. How's that?
Wow.
Actually, Pro Day, when I was a senior at Nebraska, I ran a 4.85 40, weighing just shy of 330. It was like a 4.86.
So does he want to build these guys up to 330, though?
He said he wants the 6.5, the 6.4 to 6.6 kids who are 240 to 260 pounds in high school and can run. And he said he wants to hand them over to Duvall and turn them into a bunch of 298-pounders who can run. He wants guys who can move.
Okay. Hey, Nathan says, and you're going to have to help me out with names here because I would say I'm always up to date on names. But Nathan says, I watched the great teams of the 90s and the pipeline for the 90s, especially the 94 team, passed the eyeball test. What I mean is every guy looks solid, well-built, with little fat and very athletic. Someone like, how do you say Ben's last name?
Brendan. Stye.
No. Ben.
Oh, Ben Stilley.
Stilley reminds me of the O-lineman of the 90s.
Except he's a defensive lineman.
Well, but now hold on. What he's saying is, what do you guys think of this dream offensive line? Ben Stilley at left tackle, the Davis twins at left guard, Cam Jurgens plus 20 pounds at center, Mick Stoltenberg at right guard, and Jameis or Farniak at right tackle.
Hymus, not Jameis.
He put Jameis.
Hymus.
I'm just reading what he wrote. Okay.
It's spelled Jameis. Is it? Okay. It's pronounced
Hymus. See, I'm kind of, my Saturdays are spent elsewhere, so you have to bring me up to date on the names. Sorry for everybody.
Eaton made rights in Iowa.
Yeah, that's right.
You've got a slew of guys who are incredible athletes there. There was a day when the great athletes played offensive line. When those guys who were really, really big and could run like deer played offensive line. If you weren't smart enough to play offensive line, you got moved to defense. Just saying, that was the way it was. I don't disagree with the logic there. There's been a lot of guys I've looked at where I thought, oh, God, I wish this guy would stay on offense. Chris Walker, Lincoln East kid, he redshirted last year, played offensive line. I think they got him moved over to defense this year. I really wish he'd stay on offense. You go back in time, Zach Potter thought he should have played offense. So did the NFL.
And he did in the NFL.
Yeah.
But you would have had him at guard, right?
No, tackle.
You would have had him at tackle.
I thought Zach was a classic left tackle.
But he didn't play that long in the NFL, but he was pretty good tight end, scored a touchdown.
Yeah, I think he had a few niggling injuries that kind of limited his NFL career. But he's a guy that I think if he had come to college redshirted with the intent of playing offensive line and made that was kind of the goal. Hey, I'm going to put on 10, 15 pounds a year these first couple of years in college. He's a guy who would have been a 295 to 305-pound offensive tackle, and the guy would have been unbeatable.
Grant says, my question is with the last two losses and Frost's comment about if you're not on board with this, leave now. Not exact quote, but paraphrasing there. Are we seeing some division in the locker room from guys that have bought into the system and those who have their foot out the door, and could that be why we're seeing some of the mistakes we are keeping us from winning? That's from Grant. And I also heard him say, if coaches aren't on board and if players aren't on board. I did hear that, and I was like, wow, really?
I didn't hear the coaches part, but, you know, I think it's kind of it was sort of a two-part comment, and Frost even commented today and during his press conference that his logic was he wanted to make sure, A, that he kind of headed things off at the pass, so to speak. He doesn't want the team getting down. And I think he was referencing more sort of the...
I mean, losing's contagious just like winning, right? I mean, they've lost a lot going back to last season.
It is, and I think his comment isn't so much, hey, there's guys not on board. I think it's more of a, hey, this will work. Stay bought in, keep chopping wood, stay with it, whatever euphemism, metaphor.
Row your boat?
Yeah. Good God. I got
you almost dropped the F-bomb. Well,
Dave said no, though. So, but it's, did he write you? I just think that it's a case of where he doesn't want guys to lose focus and he doesn't want guys to lose faith. I think they're – I truly believe, and I said this on Twitter about 10 different ways – they're doing good things. I'm seeing good things that I haven't seen in a long time.
It's funny because I put my neck out of the line and on the radio show I do in Des Moines because I played this from Scott Frost, and I backed him up. Now, Iowa fans didn't like it, but I thought it made a lot of sense to me.
I don't want to schedule a game for December because I think we're going to have a chance to be in the championship game. And scheduling a game in December – I don't want our kids thinking we're not going to be in the championship. We need to be in the championship game. So that leaves us October. It's not ideal to play 12 straight weeks. They don't really do that in the NFL. But if that's the hand we're dealt, so be it.
So a lot of Iowa fans were picking on him because he said, well, they're going to be in the championship game. What he really meant was, if I schedule this game right now, I'm telling my kids that before the conference season even starts that we don't have a chance. I like the psychology he's using.
No,
there.
And I like it too.
But I took a beating for supporting him there.
You take a beating from any
I do.
Fan
I,
base.
It really does, isn't it? How you do I fall screwed. Into this mess?
You are screwed. You should go work. You should go become a broadcaster for Iowa State. That
no,
might be the
no,
only people
absolutely
that
not.
Do.
That will never happen. I promise you that. Oh,
it's,
man.
No, but it's. I thought Frost made a good point there. Again, it's a little bit of a psychology thing in the sense that he, more than anything, he wants guys to buy in.
And that's what it's about.
And I think that buy-in is absolutely huge. Here's the problem, and I tweeted this. He had better talent at Central Florida. It took them a year to buy in.
Well, you know,
it took an entire year. It took two off seasons and one full season.
I mean, you were tweeting. Hold on.
For them to buy in.
You were tweeting at like 5:30 this morning because John Gaskins, former Lincoln radio host, now up in Sioux Falls, tweeted out. And
I'm just up at 4:30.
No, so do I. It was tweeted out something about talent, and I kind of played along with you guys. But are you telling me, and I agree with you, recruiting services sometimes are way overrated. Are you telling me, is it the scheme or the talent that Mike Riley and even the end of the Bo Pelini era just isn't there? It wasn't as good as advertised.
Well, the scheme isn't. I mean, from a scheme standpoint, I thought Riley. Look at Riley. 30 years of being.
Well, he's a 500 coach.
Yeah, he's got 30 years of mediocrity. Don't tell me his scheme works.
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't. It just does not. Do you know why? Because it's mediocre. It's a 500 scheme at best.
Well, is it the scheme or let me ask you this. Great talent can win in any scheme. I don't still think he was bringing in great talent.
I don't either. A lot of people disagree with that.
I don't. I think Nick Saban could go win with a pro-style offense right now.
Nick Saban's running a pro-style.
Exactly.
Well, with Tua down there, that's...
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's like a pro-style offense on crack.
Great talent, if it's in Welk, and great coach and great talent, to me...
Yeah, Nick Saban has won a couple national titles with nothing other... who is the quarterback? He's in the NFL now. But
is it the one with the hot girlfriend?
Yeah, I was going to let you say that. Brent Musburger was all over
him. McCarron? Or,
yeah, thank you. Yeah, something like
something
that. Anyway,
like that.
That was just a plain Jane pro style offense. His defense is a very basic NFL pro style defense. He doesn't do anything crazy, but he wins with insane talent. And here's the thing: the schemes he does, his players execute to perfection. And again, I've referenced it here on the podcast as sort of the Joe Gibbs, Vince Lombardi method. It's you have like 11 plays in the playbook, and you run all 11 of them just completely perfectly.
Al has a question, and Al lives in San Diego.
Where it is literally always sunny and 70.
I love the podcast. Look forward to it each week. Thanks, Al. Appreciate it. As you know, there is always a few idiots that start jumping off the bandwagon and getting very vocal at the first sign of trouble. Are the players and coaches generally aware of the negative sentiments? And if so, how much does it affect their focus on getting better?
Well, that's a good question. When I played, I don't think it you know what? It bothered us then. I mean, you didn't have social media, but you still heard it then. I think now social media, geez, it's got to be tough. I think it would be really, really tough to deal with all of that in the world we live in now, because it's constant and it is just ever present. It's everywhere. The players do hear it, and I think it does exert a pressure, and I think it, do you know what it does? It shrinks timelines, where it used to be where when I played, you could go half a season, two-thirds of a season where that kind of pressure would get to you. In this day and age, I think it's a couple of weeks.
All right, Holly's got a question. I think we have an inside joke here. Holly lives in Lincoln, works at Bryan College of Health Sciences, and is the assistant professor nurse of anesthesia. She says, hello, and GBR, did you enjoy the Iowa game?
I think Holly vomited in the back of her mouth typing GBR. Because
okay. Is she a hawk?
Oh, Holly paints her fingernails.
So she likes me, right?
With the Hawkeye emblem during the football
season. So she likes me.
Oh, yeah. Hard. Holly's good stuff. So, anyway, what was Holly's actual question?
That was it. She just wanted to know if you enjoyed the Iowa game.
Hey, you know what? I enjoyed that win over a 1AA team as much as
hey,
the next
it's FCS.
Guy whatever.
Jason says, Robin Travis, lots have been made about Frost's comments after the game regarding total commitment. We're going back to that quote again. It's a message that needs to be heard, but I don't see a team that's not totally bought in this year. In contrast, we saw some giving up last year, but not so this year. Looking at
yardage, we're only two games in, though.
So. Looking at yardage, total sacks, etc., I see a team of Warriors.
The numbers are there. Yeah. He makes a great
point. With bad breaks.
Well, and when I keep making the comment that I keep seeing things that I feel are significant and that I feel are changes. Neither team that we've played thus far has offensively done a lot of damage. They really haven't. I mean, you look at the total yardage for both teams. Both teams were what? Ballpark 242. Well, Colorado went over 300 yards of total offense, but they were still 150, 200 yards of total offense behind Nebraska. Troy had what? 242 yards of total offense, I think, something like that. Defensively, Nebraska's done some outstanding things. I mean, they had two big offensive plays, and that was that last touchdown run, and that was a defender being out of position, and the other was the quarterback going Marv Seiler on us, ripping off like a 57-yarder.
Why do you got to bring up Iowa State all the time?
So much better than Iowa.
Not this year.
13-3. So anyway, there's some very good things they're doing. Again, look, the total yardage. Nebraska crushed Troy in total yardage. Nebraska destroyed them in time of possession. Nebraska nearly doubled them in first downs. Well, I mean, those are numbers that are massive statistical anomalies, because if you look at those numbers, same for Colorado with the 330 to 44 yards rushing differential, the 7 sacks. Those are numbers that 9.9 out of 10 times end up with the team with those number advantages, not just winning, but absolutely blowing out the other team. And instead of that, we're seeing losses.
It's funny you say that, because, again, I stuck my neck out and it was late at night because Iowa played at 6:30 on last Saturday. And
did you have a flat tire?
No, I actually spent the night in Des Moines. But many of you may or may not know that I host the Iowa Hawkeye Call-In Show after Hawkeye games. And somebody called and said, hey, where does the road to the Big Ten West run through, and give me a surprise? And I said, well, right now the road runs through Iowa City because Wisconsin plays at Iowa, Nebraska plays at Iowa. But
Wisconsin all of a sudden's got a big old chink in that armor.
Yeah, so I said, my surprise is Nebraska, and people went off. I said, listen, I said, yes, they're 0-2, but I still think they're better than Northwestern. I still think they're better than
Illinois looked good on Saturday.
Yeah, but they got beat. And I think they're better than Minnesota, despite Minnesota being 3-0. I said, all you have to do is look at the numbers. Just because Kansas has a better record than Nebraska right now doesn't mean that Kansas is better than Nebraska. And I said, and it's a conversation you and I had. And people go, you're a Husker. I go, no, I'm trying to state the facts here. If you look at the numbers statistically, Nebraska should have beaten Colorado. Nebraska should have beaten Troy. Now, you take away turnovers and penalties, but that's in the ifs and buts are candy, and that's every day to be Christmas. But that goes back to the Scott Frost thing. If you believe in it and you haven't even started the Big Ten conference season yet, how do you know? And if you improve on your penalties, if you don't turn the ball over, this team's going to be pretty good, especially by the end of the season. And that was my justification for saying Nebraska was my surprise. But the road to the Big Ten West still goes through Iowa City. And now it could change to Wisconsin, depending on what happens in that Iowa-Wisconsin game this weekend. Jason is in Memphis. So that, and he just asked the question, so thanks for that. OJ has three questions. Have you noticed how many questions we have tonight?
Let's take them one at a time.
Okay. Number one from OJ. Did you get all your F-bombs out Saturday during the game?
No, because I was sitting with my oldest daughter. He's a senior in high school. Figured it probably wasn't smart.
Will you do live recording this season at one of the places that sponsors the podcast with another Husker alum? Well, here's the deal. We will be doing a live podcast at Infusion Brewing, maybe one or two.
What if it's my wife? She is a Husker.
She is a Husker alum. Here's the deal, and Rob can arm twist his former friends, but these guys want paid to show up.
Dude, I want paid to show up.
You do get paid.
And Dave pays me.
Yeah.
That's why I don't say the F-bomb.
So, we're not a paying gig. We like to sit back, have fun. We can give guys beer. But, if they want paid, I'm not paying some guy to come just sit with me. I'd love to have Jason Peter. I'd love to have Aaron Taylor on. I would love, you know who will come up? Actually, you know who's going to come up? And he actually said he'd come up to the house is Mitch Crank.
Mitch
would be great. So maybe we'll get Mitch to come up. And,
he's a former Bear.
Former Bear. But maybe we'll get Mitch to do
it. He's got a Super Bowl ring.
Also, who was your favorite Husker alum to debate football thoughts with? I know you go back and forth with Jason Peter. Who do you like to debate thoughts with?
Yeah, but Jason and I actually tend to be pretty like-minded. We probably phrase things differently. That's a good one because you would be shocked at how much we tend to when I say we, former players, how like-minded we tend to be. Because essentially you've got everybody who played for Tom Osborne and believes in how Osborne did things. The system he ran, the thought process, the philosophies, the off-season workouts, the weight training, the way he scheduled and ran practices. We're all very like-minded. Then you've got the guys who didn't play for Osborne but wish they did and agree with us because they wish they played for Osborne. So, I mean, there's not a ton of debate among us as a group because most of us tend to be very, very like-minded. You talk to most of the former players, We're all incredibly strongly behind Frost right now. And it's not because he's a former player. It's because we see him doing the things that worked when we played in Lincoln. We see him doing some of these. Osborne was a very good coach because of the way he did things. He had these underlying philosophies. It wasn't the offensive scheme. Osborne could have won with an option offense, and he did. He could have won with a pro-style offense, and he did. He could have won with a kind of a early hybrid run-pass forerunner to the spread option. And he did win with that. He ran, I can think of at least 3 to 4 different offensive systems that Osborne ran over, going back to when he was offensive coordinator for Devaney, that he ran over 3 decades. And they were great offenses with whatever system he was running. It didn't matter what his system was. It was all these other philosophical foundations to his program that he relied upon as to why Nebraska was good when he was the coach there, when Devaney was the coach and Osborne was a coordinator. We believe in all these former players are pretty unified behind Frost. Sorry, I know you want to move
no,
on.
No, no, no. But that's why
we're unified, because we see Frost using the exact same foundational principles. And you can say, well, maybe those principles are outdated. The thing is, I look down at Alabama. I see Alabama using those same principles. Well, I see Urban Meyer using those same principles. I see Bob Stoops using those same principles. I see the great coaches having used all these same principles. Frost has an offense that's completely different from Osborne's. But you know what? Those same foundational principles in terms of how you build a program are what we as former players see. And that's something that I don't think the fans are necessarily going to recognize. The one thing I hope the fans do recognize, though, is that all of a sudden there's been a massive shift in numbers that we're seeing from a productivity standpoint. And it's adding up everywhere except on the scoreboard. And it's not adding up on the scoreboard because of some of these mistakes, the penalties, the turnovers. And those are almost, it doesn't matter how good a coach you are, those things are very hard to avoid when you have had a complete and wholesale system change and talent change, and when you take over a program that was just in such complete disarray. I cannot emphasize enough, people want to forget about it because there was so much optimism from the time Frost got hired. But I cannot emphasize how bad things were in Lincoln. They were horrible. The talent level, the lack of development, the lack of conditioning.
The culture.
The culture is the all-encompassing word for it. The culture was a disaster. The amount of apathy down there amongst the players, coaches, ancillary staff was mind-blowing.
4 words. Steve Peterson, Harvey Perlman. I mean, that if you, that's the root of the problem, and it never got solved.
That's where it started.
That's where it started, and that's why there was always a division. You know, and T.O. kept it kind of behind the scenes. He wasn't as vocal about it.
I think he tried because I think he felt there was a certain...
There was a loyalty to the university. But
there was, and I think he's a guy... He's not a mudslinger.
No.
Whether it was in coaching or politics, the guy could not do it.
No.
He would have been governor of Nebraska if he was willing to mudsling, and he wouldn't do it.
Big Red Fury has this question. At Monday's press conference, Tanner Farmer called out some anonymous players who still haven't bought into this new regime. I thought it was a power move of a message to get on board or kick rocks, but does it concern you that we're entering the 4th week of the season, closing in on 10 months of Scott Frost, and players are getting called out for not buying into the program? Before you start, let me give you my just take on that. Where it's hard is everybody's psyche is different. Everybody thinks everybody's personality makeup is the same. Sometimes people need that validation or proof that it's working, and that comes in victories. I mean, you've got a lot of different personalities. You see it at your place of business. I see it at mine. And that's why it's hard to call guys out when they're not the same as you mentally. Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. Different things motivate different people.
Yeah.
And that's a great point. you know, my corollary argument would be you had guys last season who are still beating the Pelini drum. 3 years. Forget months. You had guys 3 years into the Riley regime who had not bought in and were still hardcore Pelini guys. They weren't trying to like consciously sabotage the season. They weren't trying to consciously sabotage the program. They just never bought in. They're still sitting there going, we were winning 9, 9.5, 10 games a year, and yet you still fired our coach. What does that say about our coach? What does that say about me as a player? It's immensely difficult for these guys to buy in. And it is. You got a coach who brought you here, a coach who trained you, a coach who promised you and your family that he would be there for you and would look after you and would take care of you. And now he's gone and the university's brought some dude in from Oregon.
To most of those guys, they don't know who he is. It's
marijuana, rainy weather, and awesome microbrews. I don't blame guys for having trouble buying in. That's human nature. People don't like change. And when you've bought into somebody and that somebody gets fired, it's going to be very difficult to buy into the next guy. There's going to be guys that it's going to take time to buy in. I said it earlier on this podcast. Now, granted, what was it, Husker Fury?
Yeah.
Now, granted.
He didn't give me his first name.
Yeah, he didn't. Obviously, we're doing the podcast now, so he didn't hear earlier in the podcast. But I made the point. Frost himself has very explicitly stated. He didn't explicitly state he had more talent, but he did. He had more talent at Central Florida. It took those guys over a year to buy in, to get complete buy-in. Once they did, things, you saw what happened. You went 13-0 and beat a powerhouse SEC team basically in their own backyard.
Jason says, I've heard Coach Frost talk as if this season isn't a rebuilding year repeatedly, but sidelining Martinez makes it seem like he's just taking that approach. Thoughts?
I think you got to be smart about it. You know, when it comes to maybe potentially making a bowl game, does losing to Troy hurt? Yes, it does. You know what? Osborne was a guy who kind of cut his teeth on the conference wins. If you can win in the conference, you're going to look good nationally. And that's, I have a hard time arguing against that philosophy. It's why Osborne held out Tommy Frazier in 1992 until the conference season started. We lost at Washington because we didn't have Tommy Frazier as a quarterback. And I love Mike Grant, but he's no Tommy Frazier. Frazier was probably ready to play at that point. Osborne did not want to mentally hammer the kid with a loss early in his career. He wanted to hold him out, give him some time, give him some ability to kind of absorb things, get used to the system, get used to the team. And once he did, and once that conference season started, then Osborne threw him out there. I think Frost is trying to look big picture here. Is big picture having Martinez re-injured the knee? Is it Martinez having a knee injury that is going to become kind of a chronic thing the whole season and never heals? Or would it be better to hold him out against a team like Troy?
That's what I was thinking.
And let's hold him out. We got the conference season starting next weekend. Let's give him another week or so, get him a little healthier, and then we're going right back into the fire for the conference season.
Jeff says, hey, fellas, any chance you two guys can do a live video stream of your podcast each week? The answer to that is no, Jeff. I'm sure we could Facebook live it, but that's what Adam Carriker does. The truth is, I want people to listen to this in their cars while they're working out or just in their office. If I have to do a video stream, then
Adam,
I got
Travis has a face for radio.
No, come on. I was on television for 20 years. But it's just then we got to sit there and take comments live on Facebook. Here's the deal. Rob and I like the way we do this. And plus, if you're going to do a live video stream, you pretty much have to be consistent each and every week when you do it. Rob, you see, has a 9-to-5 job. Sometimes
job.
He has a day
You've
job.
You've got a day job.
I've got a day job. We don't know
Families.
When we're going to report. Like next week, we're going to record hopefully at 7. Tonight, we've started recording at 9. So we just don't know when we're going to record. We try to do it on Mondays, but sometimes we have to push to Tuesdays and, God forbid, even Wednesday. So if you were to do a live video stream, I'd want it to be the same time every week, and we can't commit to that, nor do we want to commit to that. Because
and you mentioned there's other guys doing it. Carriker does put some great stuff out there. Go listen to Adam on Sunday nights. Go watch Adam on Sunday nights. That's kind of his niche, and he does an awesome job with it
For a defensive lineman. So you know, we're not going to do that. What we're starting to figure out is we could probably sell tickets to the basement, though. I think people would love to come just sit in the basement because we record in my basement. All right, we have a studio here.
It's a little like Wayne's World with beer.
It really is, and we have the pit. We could fit probably 8 people on the couch.
We could.
My wife would kill me. Hey, who's coming over? 8 strangers have no idea.
people are coming over.
So, by the way, thank you to everybody who emailed in. I know I put that out there each and every week. Send in your questions for Dr. Rob. I really do think the best questions come from you, the listener. I think we had almost 15 tonight. So, if you send a question, if it's reasonable, if it's, Husker related, I'm going to put it on here. So,
beer related?
Yeah, beer related. Absolutely. We had an Indiana State or an Indiana Michigan State question that I didn't use.
What?
Oh, I'm so okay.
Come on.
Okay, here it is. Rob says, "Hi guys, I'm curious about the good doctor's take on Indiana versus Michigan State. Indiana currently 4-0 and with a win goes 5-0 into the game with Rutgers. Thoughts?"
I think Michigan State's in trouble.
Do you really?
I do, and I'm a Michigan State fan. Defensively, I think they're a pretty solid team. They're kind of like Iowa this year. They have not been able to find a good offensive identity, and they're having trouble putting up a lot of points. Now, Iowa put up 38 against Northern Iowa, but for God's sakes, it was Northern Iowa. Michigan State has trouble putting the points up. I think you've got enough guys on Indiana's roster. You've got enough good athletes, those guys can score points, and I think it's going to cause issues for Michigan.
Michigan State, you mean?
I'm sorry, for Michigan State. Nebraska plays Michigan coming up here.
And Rutgers is horrible.
Indiana literally could be staring down 6-0 here.
So my son went to the, talk of Big Ten football, went to the Kansas-Rutgers game. And like by the end of the half, he's like, "Dad, Rutgers may be the worst team I've ever seen." He goes, "We're bad." And he's now saying, KU. He's like, "Rutgers is just horrible." He goes, "I've never seen anything so bad."
When Kansas is taking down Rutgers, Rutgers is pretty bad.
Well, the fat man was back in Lawrence last weekend. I think it's the first time he's been back.
Mangino was?
Yeah, because they put, remember Todd Riesling? Riesling. They put him in the Ring of Fame. That dude is a good quarterback.
You know what? Tom Herman and Tim Beck, essentially, their entire resume was Riesling. That was it. They were the coordinators under Mangino at Kansas when Riesling was there, and everybody's like, "Oh my God, these guys are geniuses." And then in hindsight, we're sitting here going, "You know what? Maybe it was just Todd Riesling."
Or true.
Maybe it was Mangino. You know what that guy can do?
He can eat.
He can eat.
He can
a
eat.
Lot. I'm surprised he's not dead.
So up next for Nebraska is going to be Michigan. The Wolverines just coming off a 45-20 win against SMU. You take away the Notre Dame game, which they opened the season with a loss. They've put 40-plus up the last couple games. Shea Patterson, really good week last week, 14 of 18, 237 yards, three touchdowns.
The nice thing is they've settled on a quarterback. Once they just decided, hey, we're going to go with Patterson, I think things started clicking. They kind of got a little consistency there. Coaches will oftentimes try to do this whole, let's keep two guys happy, let's play two guys. It does not work well. It really doesn't. I mean, I would even go back to say, if I think it's a testament to how good a team we were across the board in 1994 that we played that Orange Bowl game against Miami with two quarterbacks. Had two quarterbacks, each playing two alternating quarters. And the fact that we won that game is a testament to how good we were across the board and how good both of those quarterbacks
played were. Better with Tommy, though.
You know, I can't say the F-bomb, but I can still throw objects at you.
I think everybody started laughing when I just said that.
A question. How many touchdowns did Tommy account for in that Orange Bowl game? We scored three.
Well,
he had a safety.
He handed off to Makovic.
And a two-point conversion.
Was there a two-point conversion?
It wasn't Makovic. It was Schlesinger.
It was Schlesinger, sorry.
I'm the one drinking beer tonight.
I know. I know. But, you know, going back to the Michigan game.
Brooke did have a touchdown pass.
He did. First quarter, wasn't it?
No, second.
Second? I'm getting old. I used to remember all this stuff.
And I'm the one with the blows to the head.
I know.
And drinking beer.
But in all fairness, you're smarter than me.
I'll give you that.
Okay.
That I will not argue. All right.
Either will my wife.
You're going to make actually a podcast relevant point.
No, here. I'm just saying, you know, here, you know, a lot of people think this is going to be the game Nebraska pulls off the upset. Is this the upset game, Michigan?
It's hard for me to say because truthfully, I truly thought Nebraska would be 3-0 heading up to Ann Arbor. Because Colorado's not a great team. Akron's not a great team. Troy's not a great team. Actually, I think out of those three, Troy's probably the best team.
Athletes?
They've got outstanding athletes. And you know what? They are a well-coached team. They really, really are. They have outstanding coaching. You know, and I put this out on Twitter as well, too. There's a reason they scared Alabama a couple of years ago. There's a reason they beat LSU last year. Troy's an excellent football team. They have excellent athletes, and those athletes are very well coached. It's a good system going for them right now. I feel bad because I think their coach is going to get a big job here, if not after this year, next year maybe. But that's a very solid football team. I thought of those three going into the season, I thought Troy was actually going to be the toughest team we had to play out of those first three games. There's a reason the numbers look so much better against Colorado than they did Troy's, because better athletes and better coaching. So, that being said, though, I also thought Nebraska would beat them. And when you look at the on-field production, I'm not talking about the scores. I'm not talking about the scoreboard. But in terms of on-field productivity, it's there. Nebraska's doing it. It's just they shoot themselves in the foot with penalties and turnovers.
Do you know a lot of people going up to the big house? I've never been, you know, I've been to a lot of stadiums. I've never been to the big house.
I've never been there for a game. I've been there. I've never been for a game.
Well, the good thing is they've said, and if you've never been there for the game, either have I, but I've been reading a lot and hearing a lot, it's so damn big that the crowd rarely plays a huge impact on the game because it can almost be just silent. It's just this large bowl.
It's very spread out. If you haven't been to Ann Arbor, but if you have been to the Rose Bowl, it's very similar. And I've played in the Rose Bowl before, not the bowl game, but we played UCLA there during the regular season. It's a very shallow bowl. I mean, we're talking 100,000 plus people. Of course, when I played there, no joke. We had 50-some thousand Nebraska fans there. I think it was like 55,000 Nebraska fans. And I think they were estimating right around 30,000 UCLA fans. I mean, you had more Nebraska people there than you did UCLA fans.
I mean, I don't think that's going to happen at the big house because they sell pretty good. But there will be a good number of red.
It's kind of quiet. You take a huge number of people, but good Lord, just spread them out over a distance. It's kind of like the Rose Bowl. It's a shallow bowl. They're not right on top of you.
Wow. Where'd that hour and 7 minutes go to?
We covered a lot of ground.
We did, because we always cover a lot of ground. If you like what Dr. Rob had to say tonight, you should also like what he has to say on Twitter. Follow Dr. Rob at Doc Talk Sports on Twitter, at Doc Talk Sports. If you have want to leave a comment, just do so right here on Podbean. You can do it with your Facebook app right below, or send us questions at DocTalkSports@gmail.com. That's DocTalkSports@gmail.com. Make sure to, I do want to thank Husker Max and HuskerMax.com, because without Husker Max, a lot of you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. They distribute this each and every week, and we thank David Max and all his team for distributing the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. For Dr. Rob Zadis, I'm Travis Justice. Have a great week, and we'll be back next week with another edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.